A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us the next installment in this deep dive hardware series, Tier 4, the stuff that sits at the edge of a serious home workshop. He wants us to draw a line between what's merely uncommon, what'll wreck your property if you get it wrong, what'll hurt someone, and what's governed by actual building codes. And for each category, he wants to know, stock it, buy it per project, or leave it to the pros. Plus the Israel-specific angle. Reinforced concrete, hollow block, post-tensioning cables, all of it.
This is the one I've been waiting for, because Tier 4 is where the stakes stop being about convenience and start being about structural integrity. The moment you're hanging a 200-kilogram boiler on a reinforced concrete wall above a public walkway, you're not in the hardware aisle anymore. You're in an engineering decision. And the thing that makes Tier 4 different from everything we covered before isn't rarity, it's consequence of failure.
Tier 1 through 3, the worst case scenario is usually a shelf coming down or a strip thread you have to fix. Annoying, maybe expensive, but not life-altering. Tier 4 is where you can genuinely hurt someone.
That's the framework Daniel's asking for, so let's define the boundary. Tier 4 is any hardware where product certification, installation procedure, and substrate knowledge matter more than having the right nominal size. A 10mm wedge anchor is not just a 10mm wedge anchor, its holding power changes with the concrete's compressive strength, the edge distance, the spacing between anchors, and whether the concrete is cracked or not. That's not a shopping decision, that's a calculation.
The four buckets we need to keep sorting things into: uncommon but harmless, property damage, serious injury, and regulatory liability. Left-hand threads. Uncommon, but you're not going to hurt anyone. If you install one wrong, you'll just be confused about why it won't tighten. Wrong anchor in hollow block? Non-seismic rated anchor in a shear wall that cracks under load? That's injury territory. And fire stop fixings in a party wall where the building code requires a 90-minute rating. That's regulatory liability.
Israel makes this more interesting because our construction is dominated by reinforced concrete with rebar grids, hollow block, what we call I-tone G or thermostone, drywall partitions on metal studs, and stone cladding on concrete. The critical pre-drill check here isn't optional. You need to know what's behind the surface before the bit goes in. Electrical conduits, plumbing, post-tensioning cables, rebar. Especially in buildings from the 1990s or later, where post-tensioning became standard in high-rise slabs.
The nightmare scenario, you're drilling into a ceiling to hang something heavy. You hit a post-tensioning cable, sever it, and now you've compromised the entire slab. That's not a patch job. That's a structural engineer and a very awkward conversation with your building committee.
Let's start with the category that carries the most risk, structural concrete anchors. Wedge anchors, through bolts, shield anchors, drop-in anchors. The mechanism on a wedge anchor is straightforward. You drill a hole, insert the anchor, and as you tighten the nut, a tapered plug is drawn up into a sleeve, which expands against the whole wall. Through bolts work similarly, but use a nut on the threaded end to draw a cone into a sleeve. The expansion creates friction, and that friction is what holds your load.
Here's where Tier 4 thinking kicks in. That friction isn't a fixed number. Hilti's technical data shows that a 3/8 inch wedge anchor in 3000 psi concrete has a completely different pullout value than the same anchor in 4000 psi concrete. And that value changes again based on how close you are to an edge and how far apart your anchors are spaced.
The load tables are substrate specific. You can't just grab an anchor off the shelf rated for 100 kilograms and assume it'll hold 100 kilograms in your particular wall. If the concrete is lower strength, if you're too close to an edge, if you didn't clean the hole properly, that 100 kilo rating might be 30 kilos in practice, and failure isn't gradual. A wedge anchor in tension that exceeds its pullout capacity fails suddenly. The concrete cones out, and whatever you hung comes down.
For the listener at home, is this a stock item, a per-project buy, or a professional-only situation?
Per project, every time. You don't keep a drawer of wedge anchors in various sizes because you don't know what substrate you'll be drilling into until you're on the job. You need to match the anchor to the concrete. And for anything load-bearing, a cantilevered shelf, a heavy boiler, a pull-up bar mounted to a concrete ceiling. You need to know the concrete's compressive strength, the embedment depth, and the edge distances. If you can't get that information, you call a professional.
What about chemical anchoring? Resin cartridges, mixing nozzles, threaded rod, the whole system?
This is where the installation procedure becomes even more critical. Chemical anchors work by adhesive bond rather than mechanical expansion. You drill a hole, clean it meticulously, inject a two-part resin from a cartridge through a mixing nozzle, insert a threaded rod, and wait for the resin to cure. The bond is often stronger than the concrete itself. Properly installed chemical anchors can achieve higher loads than mechanical anchors, and they don't exert expansion stress on the substrate, which makes them ideal for close-to-edge applications and hollow block.
The cleaning step is where most people fail.
Hilti's installation instructions for the HIT-Y200 resin system specify brushing the hole 4 times and blowing it out with compressed air 4 times for a 10mm hole, 4 and 4, not a quick puff and a wish. If there's dust in the hole, the resin bonds to the dust, not the concrete, and the anchor pulls out under load. The other failure mode is temperature and moisture. If the hole is damp or the temperature is outside the 5 to 40 degrees Celsius range, the resin won't cure properly. At 20 degrees, full cure takes about 40 minutes. At 5 degrees, it's 6 hours. You need to know that before you hang something on it.
The generic marketplace resins?
This is one of those areas where the brand name actually matters. Hilti, Fisher, Sika. These companies have European technical assessments, ETA reports, ICCES reports for the US market. Those certifications mean the resin has been tested in specific substrates under specific load conditions. The generic cartridge you find on a marketplace site for half the price? It probably hasn't been tested. It might work fine. It might not. The problem is you won't know until it fails. And by then your water heater is on the floor.
Chemical anchoring. Per project, with brand name resin, following the cleaning protocol exactly.
For anything structural or overhead, I'd say professional installation. The resin systems are not complicated to use, but the consequence of getting it wrong is high enough that the margin for error is thin.
Let's talk about cracked versus non-cracked concrete, because this is where building code enters the conversation.
It's not a defect, it's a feature of how concrete behaves under tension. In tension zones, near beams, columns, and slabs, concrete develops cracks that can open and close under load. A standard wedge anchor can lose up to 40% of its holding power in a crack that opens even a fraction of a millimeter. If you're anchoring into a shear wall in a building with seismic design requirements, which is most Israeli construction from the 1990s onward, you need anchors that are tested and rated for cracked concrete with cyclic loading.
If you use a non-rated anchor?
Code violation, for one. But practically, during an earthquake or even just normal structural movement, the crack opens, the anchor loses grip, and whatever it's holding comes loose. For something like a suspended ceiling or a heavy pipe run, that's a cascading failure. Seismic-rated anchors, like the Hilti HIT-Y200 with the HIT-V rod, are tested in cracked concrete under cyclic loading. They maintain their holding capacity when the crack opens and closes.
For the Israeli listener in a post-1990 building, if you're anchoring into a shear wall or a structural slab, you need seismic-rated hardware.
You need to assume the concrete is cracked and spec accordingly. And that's not a DIY judgment call. That's an engineering decision.
Aerated fixings? Same territory?
Similar logic, different failure pattern. Firestop fixings use intumescent materials that expand when heated. When a fire hits, the intumescent compound swells to fill the gap around a penetration, maintaining the fire resistance of the wall or floor assembly. If you use a generic anchor to secure a pipe through a fire-rated wall, and that anchor doesn't have the same fire rating as the assembly, say 90 minutes, then the penetration becomes a breach point. The fire compartment fails, and smoke and flames spread through the building.
The fixing has to match the assembly's rating.
It has to be listed for that specific application. You can't just grab a tube of fire-rated caulk and call it done. The entire penetration system, the pipe, the sleeve, the sealant, the anchor, needs to be tested together. This is firmly in the professional-only category.
Let's shift to timber. Structural connectors. Joist hangers, post bases, beam connectors. What makes these tier 4?
That's the part most people get wrong. A Simpson strong tie joist hanger for a 2x10 in Douglas fir, installed with the manufacturer's proprietary connector nails, has a load capacity of about 1,200 pounds. Install that same hanger with common nails from your hardware store, and the capacity drops to 600 pounds. The connector nail has a specific head size, shank diameter, and shear strength that the hanger was engineered around. Common nails have smaller heads that can pull through the hanger holes, and lower shear strength.
The hanger is only as good as the fastener you put through it.
The fastener has to match the wood species. A joist hanger rated for Douglas fir has a different capacity than spruce pine fir. The load tables in the Simpson Strong Tie catalog are specific to both the connector and the wood. If you're building a deck and you spec the wrong nail or the wrong wood, you're building a collapse waiting to happen.
Is this a stock item?
Joist hangers and connector nails are bought per project, matched to the lumber you're using and the loads you're carrying. Keep a reference catalog, not a drawer full of hangers. The one thing worth documenting is your local supplier's part numbers and the load tables for the wood species common in your area.
High tensile bolts. Metric grades 8.8, 10.9, 12.9. What's the grading system actually telling us?
The numbers are tensile strength. An 8.8 bolt has an ultimate tensile strength of 800 megapascals and a yield strength of 640 megapascals. That's the point where it permanently deforms. A 10.9 is 1,000 megapascals ultimate, 900 yield. 12.9 is 1,200 ultimate, 1,080 yield. The misconception is that higher grade is always better. It's not. Grade 12.9 bolts are more brittle. Under shock loading or vibration, a 12.9 can fracture catastrophically where an 8.8 would yield and survive. The ductility matters.
Using a 12.9 where an 8.8 was specified is actually dangerous.
It can be, yes. The engineer specified that bolt for a reason. It's designed to stretch slightly under load rather than snap. If you substitute a harder, more brittle bolt, you've changed the failure pattern from gradual to sudden, and you won't know until it breaks.
Left-hand threads, fine-pitch threads. Are these worth keeping around?
Left-hand threads are for rotating assemblies where normal rotation would loosen a right-hand thread. Think bicycle pedals, some fan hubs, certain machinery. Fine pitch threads have more threads per millimeter and are used where vibration resistance matters or where you need finer adjustment. They're uncommon enough that you'll know when you need one, and you buy it for that project. I keep a few left-hand nuts and bolts in M6, M8, and M10, and a few fine pitch nuts in M8x1.0 and M10x1.25. Small quantities labeled clearly so you don't mix them with standard pitch.
Thread repair beyond basic helicoil. What's the landscape?
Helicoil is a wire insert. You drill out the damaged thread, tap a new larger thread, and wind in a stainless steel coil that provides a new internal thread at the original size. It's good for aluminum where threads strip easily, but helicoils can back out over time if not installed perfectly. Time cert is a solid bushing with a flange at the top. It's better for spark plug holes and high torque applications because it can't unwind. Keensert has locking keys that you drive in after installation to prevent rotation. Those are for extreme applications where a loose insert would be catastrophic. Each system requires its own installation kit, specific drill bits, counterbores, taps, insertion tools. You can't mix and match. The generic kits on marketplace sites often lack the correct depth stop or thread pitch. For the home workshop, I keep a basic helicoil kit for common sizes. M6, M8, M10, and a time cert kit if you work on engines. Everything else is per project or professional.
Tamper-resistant and security fasteners. Torx Plus, pin and hex, one-way screws, shear bolts.
These are project-specific by definition. You need the matching driver bit, and the bits are not universal. A Torx Plus is not the same as a standard Torx. The lobe geometry is different, and using the wrong bit will strip the fastener. Pin-in hex requires a hollow driver. One-way screws are designed to be installed and never removed. Shear bolts have a head that snaps off at a specific torque, leaving a smooth, tamper-proof surface. Stocking a full set of security bits is expensive and mostly unnecessary. Buy the bit with the fastener for the project.
Load-rated rigging hardware. Shackles, eye bolts, lifting points.
This is where the stakes get very high very fast. A properly rated shackle from Crosby or a similar manufacturer has a working load limit stamped on it. that WLL is typically 1/5 or 1/6 of the breaking strength. So a 1-ton shackle fails at 4 to 5 tons, and you're operating with a safety factor built in. Generic shackles from unmarked sources often have no WLL stamp, and testing shows they can fail at 50% of their stated rating. If you're lifting anything overhead, an engine, a beam, a piece of machinery, and the shackle fails, someone gets hurt or killed.
This is firmly professional territory.
For anything involving overhead lifting or supporting human weight, yes. The hardware needs traceability, a batch number, a manufacturer, a certificate. If you can't produce that paperwork and something goes wrong, you're liable. For non-critical applications like securing a load in a truck bed, a rated shackle is fine to buy per project. But don't buy a bag of unmarked shackles from a marketplace seller and assume they're safe.
Israel specific. Stone cladding anchors. Jerusalem stone. Limestone. Brittle materials.
The substrate is the challenge. Jerusalem stone can spall if you use an expansion anchor. The expansion force cracks the stone from the inside. The correct approach is usually a chemical anchor with a mesh sleeve designed for hollow or brittle substrates, or a stainless steel expansion anchor specifically rated for stone. Drilling requires a hammer drill with a carbide bit, not a rotary hammer. Too much impact force and you'll crack the stone before you even insert the anchor. And you need to be absolutely certain what's behind the stone before you drill.
Which brings us to the post-tensioning cable problem.
Israeli high-rises from the 1970s onward often use post-tensioned concrete slabs. Steel cables run through the slab under enormous tension. They're what gives the slab its strength. If you drill into one and sever it, the cable can snap with enough force to cause serious injury at the drill site, and you've compromised the structural integrity of the slab. Detection is non-negotiable. A GPR scanner, ground-penetrating radar, or a professional concrete scanning service. You cannot eyeball this.
For the Israeli DIYer, before you drill into any concrete ceiling or slab in a building more than about 30 years old, you need to know about post-tensioning.
Conduits and plumbing. The standard practice here is to embed electrical conduits and water pipes in the concrete. A drill bit through a conduit means rewiring. A drill bit through a water pipe means flooding your downstairs neighbor's apartment. The pre-drill check isn't a nice to have. It's the difference between a successful project and a disaster.
Let's turn all of this into something practical. Daniel asked for 3 lists, and I think we owe him that.
List 1, Tier 4 items worth keeping in very small quantities, 1 to 5 pieces. Left-hand thread nuts and bolts in M6, M8, and M10. Fine pitch metric nuts in M8 by 1.0 and M10 by 1.25. A few high tensile washers, grade 8.8 or higher, a Torx Plus bit set, a basic heel coil kit for common sizes, and a time cert kit if you work on engines. A small selection of A4 marine grade stainless bolts if you live near the coast. The salt air in places like Tel Aviv or Haifa will eat standard zinc plated hardware in months.
List 2. Items worth documenting but buying per project. Structural concrete anchors. Wedge, through bolt, chemical. Joist hangers and connector nails matched to your lumber. High tensile bolts in specific grades. Load rated shackles and eye bolts. Fire rated fixings. Tambour resistant fasteners. For each, keep a note of the supplier, part number, drill size, torque specification, and installation instructions. You're building a reference file, not a stock pile.
List 3. Items that should normally be sourced or installed professionally. Seismic-rated anchors for cracked concrete. Post-tensioning cable detection and any drilling near those cables. Fire-stop penetrations and rated assemblies. Structural steel connections. Welding studs. Weld nuts. Any hardware where the installation requires engineering judgment or a calibrated torque wrench. And any overhead lifting hardware where failure means someone gets hurt.
The reference inventory itself. Daniel mentioned keeping sample pieces, labels, drill size charts, supplier details. What does that actually look like in practice?
A small box, shoebox size, with one example of each Tier 4 category you've used or expect to use. One wedge anchor, one chemical anchor cartridge, one joist hanger, one high tensile bolt. Each piece labeled with a tag that says what it is, the correct drill size, the torque spec, and where you bought it. Include a printed drill size chart, metric and imperial, and a list of local suppliers. In Israel, that's Hilti Israel, Nayak, and the better hardware distributors in your area. The point is that when you encounter a problem that might need Tier 4 hardware, you can look at your reference piece, confirm the specifications, and then go buy exactly what you need.
Rather than guessing in the aisle and hoping for the best.
Which is how most Tier 4 failures start. You're standing in front of a wall of anchors, you don't know your substrate, you grab something that looks about right, and you find out 6 months later that it wasn't.
One final thought before we wrap up. The best DIYers know not just what to buy, but what not to buy. Tier 4 is where you learn the humility of knowing when to call a professional. The hardware itself isn't necessarily complicated. It's the context that makes it dangerous. The concrete that might be cracked. The slab that might have tensioned cables. The fire-rated wall where the wrong anchor voids the building's safety certification. Recognizing those limits is a skill in itself.
That's what closes this progression. Tiers 1 through 3 built out your workshop. Tier 4 builds out your judgment.
Here's our open question for listeners. What's the one piece of hardware you've regretted buying in bulk? The thing that's been sitting in your drawer for years because you thought you'd need it and never did. Email or voicemail. We might feature it in a future episode.
Next time, we're doing a deep dive on concrete anchors specifically for Israeli walls. Hollow block, reinforced concrete, stone cladding. The full decision tree.
No. Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the late Victorian period, British colonial officers in South Sudan documented a variant of buzkashi where the goat carcass appeared to glow faintly at dusk. An optical effect later attributed to phosphorescent bacteria transferred from the rider's sweat-dampened wool uniforms to the animal hide during play.
Right. This has been my weird prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It helps. We're back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.